Okay, we're going to start here on the bottom of Memted and with Bed, where we left off with yesterday. Just before we start, just two quick introductions that we need. Everyone, we have to remind ourselves of the machloket that we saw on yesterday's daf between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. Over there, they were discussing in the Braita what is called chelev mechaseh takerif. What's the definition of that? Rabbi Yishmael was more machmir, and it said that's anything that has a krum v'nichlaf, anything that has a membrane around it, and nichlaf is that it is peeled off. It peels off easily. Rabbi Kiva was more mekil over here and said that it's only a chilev hamechaseh takerev when it comes to something that has both krum, viniklaf, and then in addition to that, totav. Totav means that it's layered. It sits as a single layer over the organ. That was the machlok between them, and a question as to whether it included the kebo or the dakim. So that's going to come into play with our discussion today. In addition to that, we had a statement from Rava that he had heard from Rav Nachman that there are two types of fats. There's the fat called chimtza, and there's the fat called bar chimtza, the son of chimtza. He says, I don't know which one's satim and which one is lo satim. Satim being kosher fat, and therefore it's sotim, and lo satim means that it's non-kosher fat, then it's also lo satim. It doesn't plug any holes, or it's not sufficient to plug the holes. He says he didn't know which one it was. Rav Huna bar Chinina, Rav Huna bar Rav Nachman, came along and explained it to us that the bar chimtza is satim, the one that works, and the one that is kosher is the son of the chimtza, and the one that doesn't work is the chimtza. And the hint to that, or the siman to remember that is, yafeh koach haben mikoach ha'av, the Mishnah and Shavuot, that the son's power is greater than that of the father. So over here, the bar chimtza works and is kosher, whereas the chimtza doesn't. And now the Gemara, which is what we're going to work on now, is high chimtza, high bar chimtza. The Gemara wants to know, what are these fats that we're talking about here? We don't know what they're speaking about. What are these fats that we're speaking about? So Tashma, Da'amar Rav Nachman, Inhu Mechel Achli, in Eretz Yisrael, they're Mekil, and they eat this fat. Old Didan Mistam Nami Lo Sotim. For us, we're not at least going to have it be Sotim. I mean, Rav Nachman saying this, B'lashon Tmiya, B'lashon Sheila, meaning that, okay, we don't hold like B'nai Eretz Yisrael to eat these fats. But at the minimum, they should be sotame. We should give them the classification of kosher fat that allows it to be nistam, that it plugs up the hole. That's the statement of Rav Nachman. And from Rav Nachman's statement, we're going to try to now extrapolate what that means by bar chimtza. The assumption is that Rav Nachman made a statement about the bar chimtza because that's the only one that we know is mutar. That's the fat that is mutar. So if that's the fat that's mutar, Rav Nachman just explained to us about that fat, then in Eretz Yisrael, they eat it. And in Bavel, they do not eat it, but they do say that it's not a trefa. They say that it is sotem, any nekev that's there. The akashto. Now, what we're talking about here is the keba. We're talking about the abomasum. The abomasum has the shape of a crescent. The shape of a crescent laying down, a crescent sac that's laying down. So there are fats both on the internal part of the crescent, as well as on the external part of the crescent. And that's what the Gemara is staring over here. The kashto, the keshet, the outer edge of the crescent that has fats on it. Kuliyame plo plige de asir. Everybody agrees there that that fat is asur on the outside of the keba, on the outside of the abomasum, because that fat is krum. It has a membrane. Niklaf, it peels off. And totav, it sits as a single layer over the outside of the abomasum. So even Rabbi Akiva would agree here, and Rabbi Shmuel would agree, can't have it. Ki plige, their machlokes is the aitra. Is the internal crescent. The internal part of the crescent has fat sitting in the bend of the internal crescent. Those fats in the lesser curve, that's where we have the machloket. So now we have a machloket between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. And what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva's machloket is not shayach to the fats on the outside of the abomasum. It's only shayach to the internal piece of the abomasum. And then on the internal piece of the abomasum, where we say that it's mutar, that's the area that's mutar. Over there, that's the machloket, B'nai Eretz Yisrael and B'nai Bavel. B'nai Eretz Yisrael is hold like Rabbi Akiva, and therefore they say that those fats on the internal side, since they are not totav, since they don't sit in a single layer over there, they're not problematic, and we can eat those fats on the internal layer. Whereas the B'nai Bavel believed that that internal layer was krum and niklaf, and that was good enough according to Rabbi Shmuel. They hold like Rabbi Shmuel, and therefore they were problematic. Those fats on the inside are problematic. So we're talking about here the bar chimtza. Bar chimtza, according to this understanding of the Gemara, is referring to the fats on the inner part of the crescent, the inner crescent of the abomasum. So that would be the description. And there we have this machlokas between B'nai Eretz Yisrael and Bei Bavel, which basically lines up in the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel that we saw on yesterday's daf. And that'll explain the statement of Rav Nachman that they ate it. B'nai Eretz Yisrael ate it. And then he says, at least B'nai Bavel, maybe we don't eat it, but at least we should give credit that it's maybe possibly Tahor, and we should say that it should be Sotain. That was the statement of Rav Nachman. But then we'll understand the Bar Chimtza is the internal crescent, and the Chimtza is the external crescent. That would be the explanation of the Gemara. Now the Gemara says, Igadamre, there's another Lashon possibly, the Aitra Kuliame Lo Pligi De Shari. Everybody agrees on the internal crescent that it's Mutar. The only question is, the only argument is about the external part of the crescent, the outside crescent, because now everybody's holding like Rabbi Akiva. Everybody's holding like Rabbi Akiva that you need totav, you need a single layer. So in the internal fats, everybody agrees there's no single layer there. It's done in strip and not in piecemeal, not in a single layer. Therefore, everybody agrees it's not the problematic chalev, and you can eat it. The only question is the external. When it comes to the external, that's where they argue. Now, what do they argue about? Because the external fat on the outside of the ebumasum is attached in the middle. There is an attachment in the middle where it ties to the organ itself. So the question is, does that single attachment in the middle change it from being totav, from being layered, or no, that one single attachment's not enough to tell you that it's broken up into pieces or it's done in strips. It's still one piece, it just happens to be attached in the middle. Now, in the previous Lashon, we said that the Akashta, everybody agrees is Asur, which means that everybody agreed that that was totav, even Rabbi Akiva. Over here, in the second Lashon, we say everybody's holding like Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, the internal part of the crescent, mutar. The external crescent is a machloket in Shitat Rabbi Akiva. How do we view that attachment in the middle of the external crescent? Do we view that as making it not totav? If it's not totav, then it's kasher fat and you can eat it. Or do we say, no, that attachment, it doesn't ruin it from being a totav, and it's asur, it's fat that is asur. And that'll be the machloket, possibly here, this is the question, that'll be the machloket B'nei Bavel in Eretz Yisrael. Rashi says that Rav Nachman's statement does not fit into this Igadamre, because according to the Igadamre, here, there is no case where B'nai Bavel hold that it's Mistam Satim, because they hold either on the internal piece, they eat it, and on the external piece, they won't do anything. They think it's Asur the Gamri. So over there, you can't have a statement of Nachman which says, Michal Achli, but we are Mistam Nami Satim, that we should have at least be Satim, meaning that there's not a place that it would fit in the second Lashon. Therefore, Rashi says Rav Nachman's statement is only fits into the first Lashon. Tosfot, on the other hand, says, no, you can read Rav Nachman in two ways. You can read Rav Nachman as a bitmia, as a rhetorical question, meaning that you can say, Michal achle lididan mistam nami lo satim. That's the way we read it until now, rhetorical question. Or you can read it b'nichut as a statement of fact, that b'nei yitzhizo inu achle mechle, b'nei yitzhizo eat it, lididan mistam nami sotam. And according to us, it's not sotam at all. Period. That's a statement of fact. And based on that, you could read it into the second Lashon. Because in the second Lashon, you'll be talking about the kashta, the outer fats on the outer crescent of the Abelmasim. There, B'nai Yisrael eat it. And B'nai Bavel think it's not even kosher. It's not even so tame. So that's how you explain the second Lashon, according to Tosafot, even in Rav Nachman. According to Rashi, Rav Nachman does not fit into the second Lashon whatsoever. And it's only being explained according to the first Lashon. Now, Rashi says, Uli Didan, according to us, what does that mean for us in Europe? It says, Tarvayu Asire, they're both Asur. The internal and the external fats on the Keba, on the Abu Masim, are problematic because, Batar B'nei Bavel Garinan, we are drawn after B'nei Bavel. Our halacha follows B'nei Bavel. We do not follow B'nei Eretz Yisrael, number one. Da'anan B'nei Golanan, because we're just like B'nei Bavel. We're in the Gola, so therefore we have the Dinim like the Gola. Ulik Lishna Kama Ulachumra. And here you have two Lashonot. The second Lashon is more Mekil. The first Lashon is more Machmir. So if we have to choose between the two Lashonot, we're going to pick the first Lashon that goes to Chumrah. Because Kol Ha'ika De'echek Yitrei Lishnei B'Gemara. If you have two Lashon of the Gemara, Imidi Do'Raitahu. If it's a Machlokas and a Din Do'Raita, we go Safek Do'Raita L'Chumrah. So we go after the Lashon, Zil L'Chumrah. We go after the Lashon that's L'Chumrah, and that'll be the first Lashon over here. Ubi derabonon, when it comes to a din derabonon, that they're arguing zito bader batra. You always go over to lashon batra. Lashon batra is the koveya. So over here, since we're dealing with an iser doraita, we're dealing with chele, which is an iser doraita. We have a safek and iser doraita. We go to lishna kama. It's the chumrah. Now in the lishna kama, it turns out that b'nei bavel are oser in both cases to eat it. They're oser both in the internal fat and in the external fat. They're oser in the internal fats because they believe, like Rabbi Shmuel, that Krum and Niklaf is enough. They're Oser in the external fats because everybody agrees the external fats are Oser, even Rabbi Akiva. And since we're B'nai Bavel, therefore it's Asur for us to eat either of these fats. Now, the Gemara is going to continue with Amoraim here that actually did eat these fats, but it was only of those Amoraim that were in Eretz Yisrael, not the people of Bnei Bavel. And that's what we have here. Kiha the Amar of Avi Amar of Ami Mikamsin. What you do is you slice off on the fats that you're allowed to eat, in the internal fat that you're allowed to eat, you have to slice off the first layer. You have to slice off the first layer because the fats, she'ala keref, the membrane or the fats that sit over the entire innards and the entire chalav of the inside, which is asur, that chalav is clearly asur, they come very close and sit right on top of these fats in the internal part of the crescent of the abomasum. So when you pull out the abomasum with the fats in it, you slice off the top layer because that belongs to the keref, and therefore you sure you got rid of that. And then the layer that sits below it, which sits on the abomasum itself, that you can eat. So that's what they become seen. They used to slice it off and then eat it. You said in the name of one zaken, it comes in, you slice off that piece, and then you eat it. So Amar Rav Avyo have a kamina kamei the Rabbi Ami. I was in front of Rabbi Ami, and that was the statement before we saw Rav Avyo said in the name of Rav Ami, probably comes from this case. Kamso, v'havulei, v'achol. They did a kmitza, they sliced off the top, they brought it before him, v'achol, and he ate it. It wasn't a problem. Shamei the Rabbi Chanina, the servant of Rabbi Chanina, Havakai Kameh to Rabbi Chanina. He was working for Rabbi Chanina, taking care of him. Amalek Motz. Rabbi Chanina instructs the servant to slice the top of the fats off the Abu Masim and to give him the rest to eat. To have li deyachol, so I can eat it. Chazi to have a kimechaseim from like Lo Tachsom Shor B'disho. He saw that he was hesitating, that the servant was hesitating. Amalek, oh, Bavlat. Ah, you, my servant. You're from Babel. You're from Bavel. I know that. Gum Shadi. You should scrape the whole thing off and throw it out. Because Bnei Bavel didn't eat it. So he was, saw that he was hesitating. He realized that he was from Bavel, and he would know halacha. There was that they didn't eat the fats in the lower half. So he would not matir in front of others what is asur for them. So therefore, he told them, this is from the Gemara. This is also mentioned. The Gemara is a makom shenagu about these fats. But over here, they were not matir the fat because he was from Bnei Bavel. But we see that Bnei Eretz Yisrael were noheg, like we said over here, to eat the, what we call the bar chimtza, which was the internal fats on the crescent of the Abu Masim, they ate those fats as long as you sliced off the top, which was the chilev shalak kerev. Okay, now, Tanya. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, b'nei ma'ayin shenigvu. Now, we're talking about the intestines here. It's not clear what part of the intestines he's talking about, but whatever these internals are, that have a puncture in them. V'lecha sot matan. And you have some sort of mucousy substance that is plugging the hole. Kshera, that is fine. So, my lecha, what is this mucousy substance that's doing this? Amar Rav Kahana, Shirko de mayo. It's this viscous liquid that's in the intestines, the nafika gavduchaka, that is very, very tightly held inside the walls of the intestines. It does not come out without a tremendous amount of pressure or scraping until you can get it out. If that is the liquid that fills in or plugs the hole, that's good, because that stuff doesn't move. And since that stuff doesn't move, we consider it to be a proper plug or a proper stima, and therefore it will not be a trefa. So now, gemire chavraya de Rabbi Ava, me Rabbi Ava. So the chavrusa of Rabbi Ava learned from Rabbi Ava, umanu, who's his chavrusa is Rabbi Zera. Varmila the other way around, chavraya de Rabbi Zera, the chavrusa of Rabbi Zera, learned from Rabbi Zera, umanu, and that would be Rabbi Ava. And then the girsa, here the machlokas, whether the girsa has a Rabbi Ava in it or not. So I'm Rabbi Ava, braid Rabbi Chia bar Abo. So obviously, this is a, would be a different Rabbi Avo if we did include it over here. So this Rabbi Avo, Breid Rabbi Chir Bar Avo, Hochi Amar. This is what Rabbi Chir Bar Avo Amar. Rabbi Yochanan, Aloha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Aloha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who just gave us this fact that you have this mucus plug in the intestines that works to make it into a kshira. So the Aloha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, betrayfo. The Aloha Rabbi Shimon, be'avel. When it comes to Avelut, the Aloha is like Rabbi Shimon. Aloha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, betrayfo, hadamra. Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Treifot. We just mentioned the Shita of Rabbi Shimon and Gamliel over here. Ki Rabbi Shimon Avel Mahi. What's this din that we're saying that halacha is like Rabbi Shimon and Avelut? It's not. We have a Mishnah. Kol shlosha yamim arishonim, in the first 3 days of Avelut. Bam makom karov monei mahem. If you have a relative who's chayav in Avelut, he's one of the Shiva Krovim, he's chayav in Avelut, but all the other relatives already started their Shiva. And if he comes and joins them within the first 3 days, now this is only from Yemakom HaKarov, where he's close by, meaning he's within a day's journey from those that are sitting Shiva. He should have heard about it, but he didn't hear about it. So now when he shows up, he doesn't start a new Avelut. He continues with them, and he finishes up the Avelut with him. Yemakom Rachok, if he lives more than a day away from them, Moneh Latzmo, then he counts his own Avelut, and he keeps his own Shiva. Mikan ve'elech, after the 3 days have passed, afilu ba makom karov, even if he comes from a place nearby, meaning even if he's within a day's journey of the people sitting Shiva, moneh le'atzmo, he counts himself once you pass the first 3 days. Rabbi Shimon omer, afilu b'yom ha'shvi'i, even it's the seventh day, it's the last day of avelut, ba makom karov, he comes from a place that's within a day's journey, moneh imahem, he finishes up with them, meaning he keeps a, what we'd call, an avelot of shmur rechoka. He keeps basically a couple minutes of avelot and he finishes up with them. So now, Amar Manduhu, one of the Talmidim said there, we don't know who his name is, so they didn't remember when they put the Gemara together who this person was, so they just Manduhu. Someone said, Iske ve'isik, I should be zolche to go up there to Yisrael, v'agam le'shmait mipume demora. And I can hear this directly from the source who said it, that this is the halach. Kisalik, eventually he did make it there to Yisrael, ashkei the Rabbi Ava, brei the Rabbi Chir ba'ava. He found Rabbi Ava, prayed to Rabbi Chir bar Ava, and he was the one who was the Baal Ma'amar. Amalei, Amar Mar, halachak Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel b'treifa. Did you really say that the halachas of Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel when it comes to the treifa, when this comes to the plugging, the mucus plug in the intestines? Amalei, ha ein halacha. Amrei, I said ein halachak Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel. So that was quoted incorrectly. You have the wrong Masorah about that. The real truth is that it's ein halachak Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel. Ki Rabbi Shimon ba'avel mai. He says, what about Rabbi Shimon? I heard in your name also that you said that Allah is like Rabbi Shimon by Avelut. He says that. Amalei plukton inhu. Over there, it's a machloket. Ditma Rav Chista amar halacha. Because we have Rav Chista who says Allah is like Rabbi Shimon by Avelut. Mechein amar Rabbi Yochanan halacha. Rav Nachman amar ain halacha. And Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Rav Chista. On the other hand, we have Rav Nachman who says Allah is not like Rabbi Shimon by Avelut. Now, the Gemara gives the pis psak halacha. This is now outside of all the memorot that we're bringing down. Here's the Gemara's psak halacha. The Gemara's Pesach Halacha is Ve'en Halacha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel B'Treifa. B'Treifa, the Halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Obviously, because the one person who had said the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was misquoted, and he said in the end that it wasn't. The Halacha wasn't like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. V'Halacha Rabbi Shimon Ba'Avelut. But on the other hand, when it comes to Avelut, the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, because we have the statement from Shmuel, Damar Shmuel, Halacha Kedivri Amekil Ba'Avel. When it comes to Avelut, Halacha is always like the Divri Amekil. Rabbi Shimon here is the Mekil. Since Rabbi Shimon's Mekil, the Halacha is going to be like him. We have to add here the other fact and an interesting question that Tosfos raises. Tosfos over here raises the fact that the Avelut on the seventh day. Well, we know that when it comes to the seventh day of Avelut, that's Mikset HaYom Kekulo. They get up. They start in the morning. They have a couple minutes of Avelut and then they get up. So what are we talking about here on the seventh day? So Tosfos first suggests that it must be that they're talking about the night of the seventh day. If he shows up the night before the beginning of the seventh day, I mean, it is the seventh day, but it's just the nighttime, then he counts with them. But he shows up in the morning already, there's nothing to do. They're already done. The Avelut is over. He can't count with them if he shows up in the day on the seventh day. But then Tosfos will backtrack and says, maybe he could. Maybe it's a situation where the people are still doing Nechama. In the Avelut, even though it's Mikdash HaYom Kekulo, as long as people are still coming to give Nechama to the Avelim, they're still in the classification of Avelut. So if he showed up in the morning and they were still Menachamim there, maybe he could start the Avelut at that point in time. So that Tosfos clears up that they still have to be, if he wants to be included in the Avelut, they still have to be sitting Shiva. They still have to be Avelut. If they're not Avelut, then he can't join them and become a part of Avelut. If they've already done Mikset Kiyom Kekulo and they've come out of their Avelut, they've stood up already, they're no longer sitting Shiva, then you can't say that he counts with them because their Avelut is over. So that wouldn't work. But Tosfos comes up with a scenario where there is enough of Avelut on the seventh day where he could have joined them even on the seventh day itself, not just on the seventh night. All right, now we're going to move on to a Gemara that's really reflective of two daf ago. On Memchet Amud Bet, we had a statement by Rav Ashi that when it comes to treifot, ein omri b'treifot zudum alazu. By treifot, we don't say that one is similar to the other. We don't compare. We don't compare cuts. We don't compare organs. We don't compare limbs. We can't compare one treifot to another treifot. Now, over here, we're going to qualify that statement and say that there are times that we're allowed to do that. And that's the first statement here. Amar Rav Simi bar Chiya. Mekifin v'bnei miayim. When it comes to the innards, you're allowed to compare different parts of the innards. So what does that mean? Hanu b'nei miayim atu lekamei d'rava. These innards that came to Rava, akfinu, he compared them. V'lo idmu, and they didn't come out to be the same. So what we're trying to determine here is, did this puncture, did the hole in them happen prior to the shechita or after the shechita? So what do? We take the bnei me'ayim, we puncture them now, and we see if it looks similar to the puncture that was there. So he does that, and they don't look similar. Atav Mesharshi Abrei, his son Mesharshi shows up. Memashvesh Behu, he went and rubbed his hands over the second puncture, the new puncture. Vidmu, and all of a sudden they looked similar. So Amar Lei Manalach, ha ha, How did you know that trick? That's a great trick. How did you know to do that? How many people handled these intestines or these innards before they showed up by you? I'm just simulating what was there. I want to simulate it. I got to recreate the circumstances that these B'nai Ma'im went through. Well, one of the parts of the circumstance was that they were touched by many people. So if I do the simulate the touching, then I'm going to come up with the whole that's the same. And therefore, now we can compare the two of them. Samalei, he said about his son, Chakim Brei, Trefot, Rabbi Yochanan. My son is as bright as Rabbi Yochanan in Trefot. Now that's either because Rabbi Yochanan was a bucky in Trefot, and he was saying about his son that he's also a bucky in Trefot, or he was comparing his son in Trefot to Rabbi Yochanan Kol HaTorah Kula. Rabbi Yochanan was Kol HaTorah Kula as a bucky. My son in Trefot is as good, as bright as Rabbi Yochanan. That's something we saw earlier in the Masechta back on Daf Pavchet. Rabbi Yochanan v'Rabbi Lazar, Damri Tarvayo Mekifin Bereya. With the lungs, you can draw parallels. You can do comparisons between Trefot and the lungs. So Amarava lo amron elu ba'ota aruga. That's only true if you're in the same patch. Now, the same patch means the side. You're either on the right side of the lungs or the left side of the lungs. You can't compare the right side of the lungs to the left or the left to the right. So you have to be on the same side. Avol me aruga l'aruga lo. If you go from right to left, doesn't work. You have to be on the right or left side. V'hilchata. The loch is afilu me aruga aruga. You can compare even from the right side to the left side or left side to the right side. You can try to create or simulate or recreate whatever trefo that is there. And in addition to that, mi daka le daka or mi gasa le gasa. You can do it from a daka to a daka, a thin to a thin, or a thick to a thick. Avalo mi gasa le daka, avalo mi daka le gasa. And you can't do it from a thick to a thin or a thin to a thick. What is that saying? Rashi brings down, right, so very good. So Rashi brings down two interpretations as to what that is. His first interpretation, which he rejects, it's talking about what you just said, Josh, behema daka and behema gasa, that you can compare. You can take two different behemot dakot, take out their lungs, and puncture them and see if they compare or the trefot compare between them. You can take two behemot gasot and compare them. What you can't do is compare between a small animal to a large animal. That you can't do. But as long as they're same size animals, then you can compare between them. That's the first pshat Rashi brings down. He rejects it. He says, that's too big a kula. That's what Rashi says. It's too big a kula in trefot. We can't say that. So he brings an alternative pshat. And the alternative pshat is that, as we've spoken many times, there are multiple lobes in the lungs. There are upper five lobes of the lungs. And then there's the lower two lobes of the lungs. Those lower two lobes of the lungs, the oma, as they're known in the Rishonim, which are the caudal or the diaphragmatic lobes. Those cannot be compared to the upper lobes, the smaller lobes that are on top, the five lobes that are on top, the oni, as they're known. So you can't mix and match between the oni and the oma. You can, one oma to the other oma is fine, and from one oni to the other oni is fine, but you can't mix and match between the oni to the oma being much larger lobes at the bottom, and the oni being the smaller lobes on the top, and that's using daka and gasa as referring to the different lobes on the lungs. That's the way Rashi learns, and Rashi favors that interpretation. So Sefot brings down here the Rabbeinu Hananel, who favors the first interpretation of Rashi, and he says the reason for that is because the words gasa and daka make a lot of sense when you're talking about animals and size of animals. When you're talking about lobes and the size of lobes, it makes more sense to say gdola and ktana. Gasa and daka are not terminology that you would use with the lobes of the lungs. They don't seem to be the right terminology or the right descriptive terms. And therefore he favors, or Rabbeinu Hananel favors, the first interpretation that Rashi brought down, that thought it was too big a kula, and therefore he went to his second interpretation. Okay, now next one we have now is you're allowed to do this type of comparison of trefot when it comes to the trachea, the windpipe. If you have a puncture, you have a hole in the windpipe, either you have the size of an isar that's cut out, or you have a robe that's cut across, and you want to compare it to another part of the trachea, you'll do the similar thing and to see if it looks like. So you can only do it in that same section. Now, chulia over here, Rashi earlier in the Masechta, when we talked about chulia, they brought two interpretations. Either chulia means a single, cartilaginous part of the trachea, or meant three, like we saw in Menachot, that a chulia really means three. Over here, it's clear it must mean three, because as Rashi points out, that the size of an isar to be cut out of the trachea would be more than one of these tracheal bands. So it has to be at least three. So over here, when you want to compare, over here, you have to be within the same three that you have the trefa in. You have to do the same cut. If you want to cut or look in it, you have to do it within the same three chuliot. And if there are three of these cartilaginous rings, that's what you have to be comparing. Now, aval mi chulia de chulia lo. From one section, from three to three, you can't do it. From each section, each three are independent. Vehilchata. Now, the Gemara says, afilu mi chulia de chulia is fine. Even if you go from one section of three to the other section, all of these tracheal rings are fine to compare. But there is an exception to this. Umi bar chulia, bar chulia. And you can compare from a bar chulia to bar chulia. Avelo mi chulia to bar chulia. Velo mi bar chulia to chulia. You can't do from the son of the chulia to the chulia, or from the chulia to the son of the chulia. As Rashi explains over here, the bar chulia over here is the weaker portion of the tracheal rings. If you remember, when we looked at the tracheal rings, we've seen pictures of many times, that the front end of the rings are very thick. They're very thick. And as it comes around the edges, they thin out to the point where actually they don't make a full circle. They don't make a full circle, and then there's a membrane that sits between them. So the bar chulia can either mean the side pieces as they thin out, or that membrane that sits between them, because obviously the consistency of those areas and the thickness is different than talking about the front end, the thicker end of these tracheal rings. So he says, if you want to compare chulia to chulia, that's fine. As long as you're still on the front of the corticulous rings, then that makes sense. But if you're going to compare the front to the side, that doesn't make sense because you're dealing with a different consistency over there. And also, if you want to compare side to side or bottom to bottom, that's fine. But you can't compare the bottom to the front of the tracheal rings. So that's the halacha, and that's how you can compare if you want to check them out. All right, now we move on to a new piece, which is Amar Ziri Chalcholet. Chalcholet is talking about the rectum, Shin Nikva, that has a hole in it, Kshera. So now we know that the Bnei Me'ayin, and we know that the Dakim, the intestines, or if they get a single hole in them, they get a neck of them, they are Trefot. So here we're at the tail end of the intestinal run, we're at the rectum. So over there, he says the rectum doesn't have the same din as the dakim, as the intestines, and if it gets a puncture, a single horn, and it's kshera. Why? Hoil v'rechayim mamidot ota. Because the hips hold up that part of the animal. Bekamo, how far back does that go? Am Rabbi Eli, am Rabbi Yochanan, makoma devek birubo. That as long as you get up to the rope part where the hind legs, or really the hips, are still holding it up. But if you're not in that place, then it's b'mashu. It takes on the properties of the intestines. And then if it's punctured by a mashu, then it would be problematic. If you just look in Rashi, Rashi says makoma devek. What does it mean, makoma devek? Shehid v'ka b'yirkayim. It's stuck by the hips. Birubo. Afilu nigdar v'nital dufna elyon o tachton. Even if the robe of it is pulled out on that location, k'shera. Shein derech harei yotzei derech hanekev lachzod achorav. The excrement that's coming out is coming out with pressure. So it's not the natural movement of the excrement to move back in or to fall back in. To fall into the internal cavity of the body. Mipnei. What's the reason? Mipnei shemakom dachuku. The tail end of the rectum, which is after the hip bone, is in a very, very tight and narrow location, which is hashidrami lamala. You have the spinal column, spinal cord above. Vatsamota aliyah. Shekorim hankash. You have the, I would call them the hip bones of the these are really the tail bones, but here we're talking about the hips. They're called the hankash. Umikan ulamata himuchurim bischus. And underneath it, there is some sort of cartilaginous material that holds underneath that area of the hip. So basically, you have a channel of bone and cartilage that runs from the hips back to the end of the rectum. So therefore, even if the tube of the rectum is missing, the shape and the area is still very similar. And therefore, even if the robe of it is missing or burst open, it's not going to be a trefa. According to Rashi, the robe here means that the robe of the rectum is missing. I mean, it's cut, like you would say by the trachea. The robe is cut, either from the top or the bottom. According to the Rashba, it's even the robe itself taken out, meaning that the robe of what's there, the entire rectum, the robe of what that piece is removed. But either way, you have a very narrow channel, and that holds everything in place. And therefore, we don't have the same din as the rest of the intestines, that a single nekev will be a problem over here. Amrua Rabbanan Kamei D'Rava Mishmei D'Rav Nachman. They said over this memra in the name of Rav Nachman. So Amalav Lav Mi Amina Luchu. Didn't I already tell you? Lo Titvil Be. Don't make up things in Buki B'Siriki. Empty barrels. Don't get hot air. Don't make up these things that Rav Nachman said. Hochi Amar Rav Nachman. Let me tell you what Rav Nachman really said. Makoma Devek Afilu Nital Kulo Kasher. Forget about Rov. Even if the whole thing is gone, it's Kasher. Even if the entire rectum has gone over there, it's fine. Vehu can't be entire, but it's hu shenishtar bo ketei tfisa. As long as there's a hand's worth left over there, I mean that you can grab, amount that you could grab with your hand if that's left. Vikamo, how much do you need to grab with your hand? So Rabbi Kamale bata bitora. In an ox, it would be the amount of a bata. Now bata, according to Rashi, is a thumb, etzpo. It's your thumb, the width of a thumb. The width of a finger, width of a thumb. That width would be enough to be left over after the hips. As long as you have that little section after the hips, you're enough. That's the way Rashi learns it. On the other hand, Tosafot believes that it's really not, the bata over here is not one finger or the thumb, but rather it's four fingers. And so it's four fingers worth that would be the rectum that's left after the hip. And as long as everything else after that doesn't have to be there, and that is fine, it would not be a trefa. Okay, now we're moving along in the Mishnah. We just now moved on to the next one of the trefa in the Mishnah, and that is hakeres hapnimi, which is the inner rumen. The keres is the rumen. The rumen is the first area where the food reaches after the cow swallows. It's a very large area. And so the rumen we saw in the Mishnah, there was something called the keres hapnimi and the keres hachitzon. It's the inner rumen and the external or outer rumen. The Gemara here wants to know, what is this inner rumen that we're talking about here? I'm going to have a major machloket between the Amoraim as to what it is. So Amar Yehuda Marav, Heid Natan Bashila, Resh Tabachaya B'Tzipori. So if Natan Bashila, who's the head butcher in Tzipori, Lifnei Rabbi, Mishum Rabbi Natan, he says this before Rabbi, in the name of Rabbi Natan, I'm assuming he's talking about Rabbi Natan Abavli, that Ezohi Keres Hapnimi, what is the Keres Hapnimi? He says it's Sanyo Dibi. It's called the Sanya de Dibi. Now, Rashi, in explaining what Sanya de Dibi is, gives two interpretations of what it is. The first one he explains describes an area of the internal digestive system where even the wolves would not want to eat it. It's a pocket, and a pocket where even the wolves would not be interested in eating that area because it's so disgusting. The area, which I think, I tried to work on this, but I think I identified it as something called the cecum. Which is it's called spelled C-A-E-C-U-M, the cecum, which is an area. It's the first portion of the large bowel. It receives the fecal material from the small bowel, and it's actually where the appendix sits. It's actually a sac that is a dead end. It's a cul-de-sac. It's a dead end. The food comes in and goes out the same entrance, and that's what Rashi describes over here. Something that has only one petach. The food comes in, comes out from that area. And it's deposited there from the small bowel and then comes out into the large bowel. And that area of the cecum, that's what we're talking about over here. It's an area that's obviously full of feces, and that's why even the foxes wouldn't want to eat it. It's an area that's extremely disgusting, and that's the area that's called the keres hapnimi. So now, truthfully, that's not anything to do with the rumen anymore. Over here, when you're saying the keres hapnimi, we've now totally moved it away from being the rumen into something that's along, much further along in the intestinal and digestive tract. The rumen's all the way in the beginning. Cecum is always towards the end of the digestive tract. And that's because the word pnimi can have many meanings. The word pnimi can either be internal, meaning all the way buried in. It also can be pnimi can mean the first, because it's something in the pnimi, it's the inner one, meaning the first one that you would reach. Or pnimi can also mean something that, like here, we're talking about a sac or something that's enclosed or something that just sits by itself. So the word pnimi, we're not sure what it means. So this is the first attempt at what it means. This keres pnimi is this cecum that's there. Rashi brings the second interpretation, which says that it's the back area which they cut open to let the waste out. So in that case, it might be the back of the actual rumen. They're like little lumps in the back of the rumen towards the hind of the animal. And that area where the tabachim, the butchers, cut open, and that's how they release that which is inside the stomach. So that's the other second interpretation that he brings back. He says it's from in a pancha. It's my pancha is the rumen. So it's from the back of the rumen where they motzi aperish, that they take out the waste from it. Makom shasanui zav varishonira. And he says, I like the first interpretation better, that it's the cecum that we're speaking about over here. V'chein Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha sanya dibe. That's what this keres hapnimi is. Now we're going on to our next one. Rabbi Shmuel Amar. Istomcha de karso. It is the entrance to the keres. Now, when we're talking about the entrance to the keres here, it's not clear. Rashi says, Ani shamati istomcha. I heard that this was the istomcha belaz. Venio de amahu. I have no idea what this istomcha is. Now, there are different possibilities brought down about what it really means in the translation of this istomcha. One is it's the entrance to the abomasum, the keba that we spoke about before. The other possibility is actually the entrance into the dakim, into the small intestines. That's what we're talking about here. And the last possibility, and maybe makes the most sense, it's the entrance into the rumen. That would be the area, the entrance or the area into the rumen. Those are the different possibilities of what this istamocha de karsa is over here. All right, the next possibility is Rav Asi Amar Rav Yochan Makom Tzar Yesh Bekeres. Asi says the name of Rav Yochan, there's this narrow part of the rumen. Ve'eni Odea, and I don't know what it is, Ezehu. I don't know what it is. That's what I'm talking about, but I don't know what it is. Some Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, Nafal Karsa Bebira. Great. You took the rumen and dropped it. You know, you dropped the ball here. You dropped the ball into the bore. You dropped it into the pit, into the well, because basically you told us a piece of information that's useless, because you told us it's this narrow place, but you don't know where it is. So how does that help us out? So Amarav Acha Bar Rav Ava, Amarav Asi, Minametzer Lamata. I'll explain to you what it means. It means from the part of the rumen that begins to narrow. So here we're talking about the beginning of the rumen. The beginning of the rumen comes from the veshet, the esophagus drops into the rumen. And then obviously the rumen expands from there until it reaches its larger width. So when you're coming from the other direction, when you're coming back from the rumen itself looking towards the esophagus, it's from the point that the rumen begins to narrow towards the esophagus. And that would be the keres ha-pnimi. Here the word pnimi meaning the beginning, the entrance, the beginning of the rumen where it's narrow in the beginning. Rabbi Yaakov bar Nachmani amar shmo, makom she'ein bo milat. It's an area where there is no, we'll call it lining, but over here we're talking about like a downy lining that Rashi describes, which are the villi. In the rumen inside, there are villi, which are these projectiles, like finger-like projectiles that are inside of the rumen, and the food comes around them, and they absorb the nutrients and the materials from the food through these villi. So he's saying that the part, she'en bo milat, in the rumen, the part that does not have these villi in it, that's the area that's called keres ha-pnimi. Rav Avina Amar Gneva Mishum Rav Betefach Beveshet Samuch the Keres Zui Keres Apnimit. The first tefach near the esophagus, that is called the Keres Apnimit. And as we saw this statement before in the Gemara Bekam Mem Dalet, that tefach harishon, it's not clear where that tefach is. That means it's the first tefach of the esophagus itself. I mean, the last tefach of the esophagus before it hits the rumen, that's what we're talking about here? Or is it actually the first tefach as you enter into the rumen? From the time that the esophagus enters the rumen, the first tefach inward, that will be considered the keres ha-pnimi. So we saw both interpretations back on Mem Dalid. Either one of those is what we're talking about here. Amrei b'marova mishmei de Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina. Now we take a new interpretation that is nothing like what we've seen until now. Kol ha-keres kulo, zu keres ha-pnimit. The entire rumen is called the keres ha-pnimit. Pnimi does not denote over here any subsection, but rather the whole. The whole entire rumen is called the keres ha-pnimit. Ah, so then what's the keres ha-chitzon? Right, if you say it's a subsection, then you can explain what's pnimi and chitzon. But over here, if you explain the entire keres, the entire rumen is pnimi, then what's the chitzon? So this we saw before, and this is the way Rashi interpreted in the Mishnah, it's basar chofe et rov ha-keres. It is the flesh that covers the majority of the rumen. And that is, if you on the underbelly of the animal, in the underbelly of the animal, you have flesh that runs basically from the forelegs to the hind legs, from the chazeh, from the chest, all the way back to the hind legs of the animal. Within that sits, in about the center area of that, is the puncha, which is this keres, is the rumen. Now, most of the rumen actually sits over there. The robe of the rumen sits over there. There's a small portion of the rumen which is pushed upward towards the chazeh, which is the front end of the rumen, which won't touch that bottom layer of basar. So now what we're saying is that the robe of that basar that is adjacent or parallel to the keres, to the rumen. So if you take the demark, the areas that are from the end of the rumen to the other end of the rumen, if a rove of that basar is missing, that is a trefa, and that'll be basar achofe et achitzon or keres achitzon. That would be the description. So if you're above that, if you're past the rumen, then if you take that basar off, it doesn't matter. Again, in front of the rumen also. It's just the area that's opposite the keres. If you have a rove of that missing, that will be problematic. Now, Rabba Bar Rav Huna gives us our last one. Amar Mefarato. It's the part that you rip out. So my Mefarato, what does it mean to rip out? Rav Avya Hecha de Pari Tabche. It's the area where the butchers cut open to take out the intestines, the internals of the animal. So when you're flaying the animal, if you remember, we hang the animal up from its hind legs, and the animal is facing you. So the belly is facing you. If you slice the belly, then what you can take out from there, when you slice it and pull it out, whatever comes out over there, that's called the keres ha-pnimi. So if you think about what we just explained before, that's the lower end of the rumen. The lower end of the rumen, because that's the base that sits on the basar that is at the underbelly. So if you slice that underbelly, that piece of the rumen, it's going to come popping out. So now, Benardav, Deka Rabba Bar Rav Huna. In Ardav, they held like Rabba Bar Rav Huna, that was the area that was called the keres ha-pnimi, and that a nikev b'mashu would be problematic in that area. So Amalei Ravashi, the Amemar, a Amemar who came from Nahardah, Ravashi asks him, Kohani Shmaita Tamai, what do you do with all the other opinions? How come you only hold the Grab of Rav Huna? Here we're dealing with the Dindo, right, though. How come you ignore all the other Amorayim here? So Amalei Kulu Shaychim with Rav of Rav Huna. He says, all of them fit into Rav of Rav Huna. All of the other Memrot are in the same location. When you slice open the animal and that bottom end of the rumen comes out, all the other Memrot of the Amorayim are subsumed in that. Those pieces that they're talking about are included in that, including the cecum, including the, if you think it's the back of the rumen where they sliced it open, if you think it's the entrance to the Istamacha, all of these areas, all of those were included in it. Now he's going to ask about particular statements of Amoraim now, which is, Udravasiam Rabbi Yochanan Mai. Rabbi Yochanan, who said he didn't know. He said it's a Makom Atzar, but I don't know what it is. He says, I'm like, Far Pesha, Ravacha Bravo. Ravacha Bravo explained to us that it's the narrow area of the rumen as the esophagus comes out, and that will be included in this area that pops out. Udrabi Avino Udnei Marava Mai. What are you going to do with Ravina and Bnei Marava? Because now you're going to run into a big problem. Bnei Marava said the entire rumen is the keres apnimi. And Rabbi Avina said that it was the tefach hasamuch leveshet. So now we have a problem because those areas are clearly not included in the part that comes out when you slice the underbelly of the animal. So Malay, Hane Vade Pliga. He says, yes, those two Amoraim clearly argue here, but we're passing like Rabba Bar Vehuna, even though they argue on us over here. There's an extremely important Rashi over here in Divrei HaMatpil Mai, and Rashi says, V'keipin delo ifsik hilchata, since we don't have a psak halacha here from the Gemara, avdinan lechumra. We have to go lechumra, because we're dealing with Nisurei Duraita, v'tarfinan b'chula keres, that means that the entire rumen, v'nekev mashu, if there's any little puncture inside of the keres, k'bnei ma'arava. We go like b'nei ma'arava, b'nei Eretz Yisrael, who said that the keres of p'nei, or the definition of keres of p'nei, is the entire rumen, and therefore any hole, any puncture we find in it will be problematic, and that's the chumra. Miu, kohanach trefot anan lo tachinan lemivdekei batrahiu. But nevertheless, when it comes to all of these trefot, we don't check for them. Cholkama delo mishtakachan azlinim bataruba. If we don't have any evidence or any reason to believe that there's a problem over here, we're going to go after the rove. And over here, the rove is that there shouldn't be a problem. In most behemoth, these issues do not arise, and therefore we don't have to go out of our way to go and check for them. Aval, there's one exception to that rule, which is ubisirche dereya. When it comes to the growths on the lungs, or psulot that deal with the lungs, mishum deshchichan, because those are common, mipdukei batkina batrahu, we do check them. So even though we have multiple trefot that are being mentioned over here, we don't go, when we have to shechita on a behem, we don't go and look for all these different types of trefot and check out all the intestines, because these types of things are unusual. We go and we are somech achar ha-rov, the majority of animals that don't have a problem. Unless, of course, we have evidence or reason to believe that there was a problem here. But when it comes to the lungs, since there's a reyuta, there's a deficit in the chazaka, there are many animals that have a problem, so we have to be choshesh for that issue, and therefore we check in every animal the lungs, even though there is probably a majority of animals that don't have a problem, but there's a significant enough minority that we do want to check, and it makes us wonder about the chazaka with regards to the lungs. Rashi back on Yud Aleph and Aleph had a similar statement, more explicit, more extensive statement over there, but a similar idea that we only check the lungs and not the other trefot. Okay, now, Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah made a distinction when it came to the keres achitzona. So when it came to keres apnimi, we said that it's nike b'mashu. When it comes to the keres achitzona, we said that it has to be berov. Now, Rabbi Yehuda came and distinguished between a behema gdola and a behema ktana. He says, by a gdola, it's a tefach, by a ktana, it's a rov. And that's what the Gemara is about to explain. I'm Rabbi Binyamin bar Yefet, I'm Rabbi Elazar, lo gdola, gdola mamash. We say big, we don't mean literally big, like a large size animal, lo ktana, ktana mamash. Doesn't mean a small animal. Ela, kol shenikra ba tefach, velo havi ruba, zuhi shashanino big gdola. A big animal just means an animal that, if you rip a tefach on the underbelly of the animal, and that is not the rove of the keres, that does not reach the rove of the keres, that's a behema gdola. On the other hand, if you have an animal beruba, that the rove of the underbelly, which faces the rumen, and that you take out that rove, and velo habi tefach, it's still not a tefach, zuhi shishanil b'ktana. That was what it means, ktana. So basically what we're saying is, it's the lesser of. It's either the lesser of a tefach, or the rove. Whichever one is the lesser of those two, that's what makes it a trefa. So in a small animal where the lesser of the two is the rove, then the rove is going to make it into a trefa. In a larger animal where the tefach is the lesser of the two, that will make it into a trefa. Again, large and big, just about whether what will be the lower of those two numbers, whether it'll be the rove or the tefach. Now the Gemara says, Ruba velo habi tefach pshita. If it's a rove and it's not a tefach, then of course it's pashut that it's a trefa. It's the rove. When it says, lo tricha davi tefach b'mashu, it's a case where it's a tefach plus a little more. The underbelly is a tefach and a little more. So ma'u I would think ademikra ba tefach. I would need to get to the full tefach. Since he mentions tefach, I would have to get there. And lo abi trefa until you go through that whole tefach, because there's still a little more than the tefach. So maybe I have to get the whole tefach. Kamashman, then a rove is sufficient over here. To be honest with you, what type of havamin? It's not a great havamin. I don't know what the Gemara is thinking. Either it's rove, and that's rove. What do you mean? Tefach, if it's more than a tefach. So Tosafot asked that question over here, and he brings down an alternative explanation from the Rabbeinu Hananel, which is actually very interesting. And he says that the case over here is that the whole keres doesn't have a tefach. The entire width of the keres is only a tefach. And then we have tefach umashuhu. So in that case, that's the question over here. When you have the whole keres is just a tefach, then we know for certain that rove is the determining factor over here. So if you're missing the rove, it's going to be a trefa. But what happens if you have a little more than a tefach, and the keres itself is a little more than a tefach? Then over there, what's the story? So ruba delabi tefach. If you have a rove that's not a tefach, the haino kshein b'chol a keres tefach. When the entire under rumen does not have a tefach on it, that is the case where we have rove. Chein parak shapir pshita delabi tefach. Shariyim b'kula tefach. You can't demand a tefach there because there isn't a tefach there. Mushani going to ika tefach umashu. No, the case here is when you have a little more than a tefach. Madu tema gemed ika bakula tefeh mi tefach. Lo mitchufa de mikra tefach. It won't be a shreifa until you have tefach. The answer is no, that it goes all the rove. So the way that Rabbeinu Hanano reads it, it's got to do with the entirety of the space there rather than what the rove is adding up to. So that it's the entirety of the rumen. If the entirety of the rumen is less than a tefach, then there's nothing to talk about. Of course, rove is kovei over here. There's nothing to talk about. You can't get to a tefach. On the other hand, if it's greater than a tefach, that's what means tefach umashu. Then I would have thought maybe a tefach should be the determining factor. The end is no. That it's the rove that is the determining factor over here. Okay, now we'll just finish up to the two dots, a little small piece over here, and then we'll continue from the two dots tomorrow with a new sugya. Amar Gneva, Amar Rabbi Asi, Nikdara Kesela, if the rumen was cut open, the size of a sela, meaning it's circular form in a sela, trefa, then it's a trefa, Shi'im Timtach, Tamur al Tefa. Because if you stretch it out, it'll be like a tefa. Now this is a machloket Rashi and Tosafot, what that means. Tosafot means that if you take the circumference of the sela, if you take the circumference of the sela, that will equal a tefach. So this sela, that is approximately a third of a tefach, when you take the circumference around, you multiply it by pi of the diameter, then you end up with a full tefach, and that's how you measure it according to Tosafot. According to Rashi, it's literally if you pull the circle out, if you stretch the circle out, it will reach a tefach. When you flatten out the circular nature of it and elongate it, that will reach a tefach. So since it'll reach a tefach, and we know that a tefach is problematic when the underbelly, therefore if you have this circular cella that's cut out, that's also a trefa. So Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Ava, B'didim HaRashli Mene D'Gneva, Amavra D'Narda. This statement of Gneva was explained to me on the bridge in Narda, Kesela Kshera. If it's exactly a cella's worth, then it's Kshera. Yoter Kesela Trefa. If it's more than a cella, then it's a trefa. Bekamo, Yoter Mekesela. What does that mean? How much more than a cella? So I'm Rav Yosef, we go on the island Tlatka Shita B'tzipa, B'dochaka, below Tzipa B'ravka. So I'll tell you the measurement, how you know that it's more than a sela, is if you take three date pits, B'tzipa. If they have B'tzipa, means that they still have residual date on them, then they fit in B'dochaka. They have to be pushed in, you know, they don't go in so easily. Below Tzipa, if they're clean date pits, B'ravka, and they go in smoothly. So if that size, then you're already greater than the size of a sela. So if you can take three date pits, and push them in, or they go in and out easily, then you're already more than a sela. If they have no food on it, if they have a little food on it, if you can push them in and out with a little difficulty, that's already your yoter misela. So that's the measurement that you can use, the homemade measurement that you can use is the date pit in order to know what the size of the sela is that we're describing over here. Okay, so I think that we will stop over here, and then we'll continue with the next part of the Mishnah, the next couple of trefot in the digestive system in the Mishnah.